Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, does FIFA's rules on prohibiting signs of religious identity on the pitch discriminate against Muslims?
In April 2010, the International Olympic Committee and FIFA banned Iran's women's football team from participating at last year's inaugural Summer Youth Olympic Games in Singapore because of their hijab. Although the ban was later reversed, the team was required to wear a hat instead. In this episode, Islam and Life will investigate to what extent do FIFA's rules discriminate against Muslim women and what can they do to affirm religious freedom on the pitch.
We heard in the West about all the discussion around the headscarf, the visibility of the Muslims, the masks, and then anything which has to do with dresses. And this is a discussion that we had in Western countries, in France and in other European countries now. And then now we are reaching another dimension of the problem when it comes to sports, where we don't want to see any religious visibility, any religious signs. And this has an impact not only on Muslims, on all the religions and spiritualities where there is an expression, a visible expression of the belonging to a specific tradition. So these are important questions, because at the end of the day, it's as if by acknowledging or accepting such rules, we are accepting discriminations towards people and towards women sometimes, because this is very often the case, that they are more visible in their appearance in whatever situation in the daily life and in sports as well. So to answer all these questions, I'm now joined by Rimla Akhtar, chairperson of Muslim Women's Sports Foundation. Thank you for being with us today. You are involved in this discussion, you are following. So let us first try to get a sense, where does it come from? Because we had this discussion in societies and all this discussion around it, as if, you know, you Muslims, the only way you are going to be accepted is when you are invisible. You don't want to see you. So we had a discussion on the headscarf. Now we have something which is, and by the way, in the social life, it's about neutrality. You should have to influence. And now it's coming on the pitch. It's going on within the sport realm. So why and where does it come from exactly?
Well, I guess the history of it is really, if you look at the law that they're referring to, FIFA referring to Law 4, previously there was no particular reference to any sort of visible signs of political, religious or any personal statements on the field. The issue came to light actually through an issue in Canada, where a young Muslim girl wearing the hijab was actually red carded, sent off the pitch by the referee for refusing to remove her headscarf. And that's where the issue was brought to light. The press put a lot of sort of emphasis on it, and it was brought to
the
table.
This was the only reason, because she was wearing the headscarf.
Exactly. Yeah. The referee said, you know, I guess from the referee's perspective, they were thinking about maybe from a safety perspective. They weren't sure if it was safe enough, and they have to respect the fact that you have to keep all your players safe when you're a referee on the pitch. So the issue was brought to light that way. Like I say, the press, the Canadian press in particular, brought the issue forward to FIFA. And it just so happened that the FIFA's lawmaking body was meeting in Manchester, in this country, that very time. I believe it was in 2007. And the issue was just brought to the table that day. And they came out of their meeting and said that effectively the hijab didn't conform to Law 4, although at that stage there was no mention. Law 4 is about a player's basic equipment, their basic kit, so the shirt, the socks, etc.
But the point which is important, that we heard also in schools, we heard in gyms and everything, it has to do with security.
Yes.
And we had conflicting reports on that, people saying, what is the point? There is no problem of security by, you know, wearing the headscarf. It could be even, you know, behind that, so it shouldn't be a problem. And still we have people saying, no, it's a question of security. So it's not, it has nothing to do with a specific religion. It has to do with security. What would be the first answer to that?
Well, I would say in terms of safety and security of a player on the pitch, and I've spoken to referees about this, there are sports versions of the hijab, for example, which are just as likely to be pulled and cause the player injury as a shirt collar would be. Mm. You know, nowadays in the Premier League you see foreign players with their snoods, you know, the likes of Tevez at Manchester City, etc. They're there with their snoods and they're more dangerous than a headscarf can be. So for me that argument is really redundant. And that's really what we've come up to. What it really is, it's about the, for me personally, it's about the expression of, you know, your expression of your religion, your faith, in daily life. And obviously when you're playing sports, you're not going to change that. And really what it is, it's about educating people about the fact that that shouldn't be a hindrance to you being being able to participate in sports. So safety isn't really
the reason for me. Safety or security is not an issue for you.
Not for me.
There is another problem, which is, once again, we heard about the FIFA, the way it's run and the way we had the discussion. It's really there are tensions, this question of, you know, governments and authorities. Mm. It's a state sometimes perceived as a state within states. And still, do we have within the FIFA now conflicting trends of people or... Is there, you know, people, are there people coming from specific countries? For example, what we heard is that France is playing on that direction, asking for, and others would be resisting. What is the state of affairs within FIFA? Do we know something about what is happening
right now? Well, I guess we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. We can never know that unless we're actually involved. I think it's clear to see by the recent World Cup bid that England made, you know, some of the things that do go on behind the scenes. From the hijab and the banning of the hijab perspective, there are, if I just clarify, in terms of the board that makes the laws, there are 8 representatives on there. 4 are from FIFA as a whole, and 4 are actually from the home country, so England, Wales, Scotland and Ireland. So for a law to be passed, that meant that one of the home country nations had to agree with FIFA, the 4 representatives of FIFA, to allow it to go through. So for me, it's quite disturbing to see that one of our own UK countries has, you know, at least one person has agreed to this law coming through. It just makes sense in terms of numbers. So that's the real issue for me. You know, we've seen, like I say, the trends of what's happening in FIFA. We can never know how it all works, but we see on the surface what's coming out. And clearly one of those massive issues is how religion is represented on the pitch.
So if we look at the situation now, it comes from a specific event, as usual, it's always the same. We had exactly the same in France. It's always one controversy around one, and then we end up with law and new legislation. If we now have to think about who is, in fact, could be discriminated on this, we are talking about the headscarf. Is there something else that is could be targeted, for example, other religions and other traditions? And from an Islamic viewpoint, what is problematic and in which way we have a problem with this?
I guess it's not just Muslims that are going to be impacted. That's quite clear. It's clearly saying it's a religious expression, any religious expression. So, for example, Sikh men who wear the turban would be seen as wearing something that's not conforming to the laws of the game. You know, jewellery, etc., isn't allowed anyway, so crosses on jewellery wouldn't be allowed. But then, you know, there is that point. You could go so much into this. You could go and say, you know, if a man's got a tattoo or a woman's got a tattoo of a cross on their arm, is that religious expression on the pitch? What are you going to do about that? So we could.
But I got an argument about this, and people saying, no, it's a tattoo, it's okay. It's not really a religious.
The point is who decides.
Exactly. Yes.
The point is who decides what it is. And, you know, for example, we saw a little clip there about the Iranian youth team. And effectively, they were wearing a sports version of the hijab. Actually, Iranian teams actually are quite far ahead in terms of the sports versions of the hijab. And all they had to do was make it look less like a hijab and more like a hat. And it was allowed. So for me, that's quite clear. I think the message is coming out quite clearly in terms of what is and what isn't allowed on the football pitch, according to FIFA.
Yes, but you are saying it's quite clear for me. It's quite clear. It's clear, in fact. Indeed, what is said, we don't want religious signs.
Yep.
So anything that is referring or sending you back to a religious dimension, we don't want this, because we don't want to have anything which has to do with religious influence and proselytism on the field. So having this in mind, this is it. So do we need something else to go further? We know that this is religion is a problem here.
I guess so. You know, you can quite easily infer that from what they're saying. And from my perspective, and what I'm doing, what the Muslim Women's Sport Foundation are doing, is really trying to do an educational campaign. So we work quite closely, for example, with the English FA, in terms of making sure that this law does not impact Muslim women in this country. Now, we know we have a wider sort of responsibility to make sure that around the world, men and women around the world are not being impacted by this law. And we'll continue to work on that. But essentially, the message that's coming from FIFA is quite clear, but it's about now trying to change that message that's coming from them, change their viewpoint on it, and that's what we work on. You know, I have girls that come to me and say, you know, I play for a local team and my team aren't sure if I'm allowed to play because I wear the scarf, and referees are asking
me. This has impacts at the local level. Yes.
Yeah. In Scotland, there was a team that was banned from playing in a tournament because most of them, I believe, wore the headscarf. And that was as a direct result of what came out of the meeting in Manchester. So clearly this is having an impact, and the Iranian youth team is one great example of that. And you know, we have to persevere and work to show that actually the expression of your faith on the pitch isn't the matter. The matter is football should be for all.
Let us come to the solutions. But just before this, mainly what we have as problems, you were talking about the SIC, for example, and others, it could affect, you know, men, but mainly it's about women. This is the reality from an Islamic viewpoint. This is what we have. Yeah. Do you have reactions coming from men's team, or it's really about women or Muslim women involved in sport?
From the Islamic perspective, yes, it's women. It's the women that are being affected. Yeah.
So this is the main point, I think, that we have been repeating to you know, when it comes to the discussion about equality, that we want the women to be involved in sports, to practice sports. We had, you know, a very interesting trend in Iran, you know, saying, you know, we want to be involved in all the sports activities. And now what we get from the international scene, from the FIFA, is restriction, is that you cannot do this, you cannot do that. So first, it's really a contradictory message that we are getting here. Is what do you want exactly? What is the objective of the whole thing? And I think that we need to come with a very strong discourse as Muslims on this, because it's not only enough to go for the legal actions, it's really to come with, look, let us talk about what we are. What are the objectives? And the objectives is for us, for women, to practice sports at the highest level as professionals. Can you get this message through in all what you are doing? Is it heard or not?
It is heard in this country. I mean, this country it is. I have to say the English FA are fantastic. You know, if you think about it legally as well, you know, if you're going to prevent... I know of a very high-profile Sikh referee that wears the turban, for example. You know, If the FA here were to prevent that man from being a referee and participating in football, it would be religious discrimination against him. And from a legal perspective, that's just not allowed. Similarly, for Muslim women, now football is supposed to be for all. Sport is supposed to be for all. It's supposed to be a way of uniting people and breaking down barriers of all kinds. So for me, the message has to be quite clearly in relation to this, that we need to get the football for all message out there.
So to come to start by saying, this is pure discrimination if we go that direction. This is the starting point.
If we're preventing people from participating in sport purely because of their faith, then clearly it's religious discrimination. I think English Law sees it, and English Law tends to be one of the best, I think, in the world. So that's clearly saying to everyone that it is religious discrimination. And we work from that angle. We work from the angle of saying that you are, on the one hand, saying, we want to bring football to the world. We want to bring it to Qatar, for example. And we want to bring it to places that have never seen football at such a high level before. And on the other hand, you're saying, well, actually, if you don't do it our way, you're not welcome in the FIFA footballing community, or the footballing friends, as they call it.
So this is from the theoretical, philosophical approach, that we need to be quite clear on what we want to do. Now, on the practical ground, you are talking about what is happening here in the UK, and it's easier maybe than in other Western countries or around the world, and that's very true. If we look at, you know, the atmosphere, for example, today in France around the headscarf is so heavy that this has an impact on anything which has to do with sports and you know, gyms and everything which is connected to the headscarf is creating problems in France, in Belgium, now in Switzerland, in other European countries, in northern European countries. Even we had some problem with people in the States. The atmosphere, it's very negative around this. So practically speaking, what would be your advice to the girls, the Muslim girls, who want to practice sports but also have to get it right? This is their right, just to be respected as human, as women in this country. So what could be the practical steps?
Well, really, it's about staying strong in your own beliefs, first of all. I think it takes a strong woman to stand up to something like this that's coming her way, and we see a lot of our Muslim sisters out there that are being strong in this regard. So the first thing is for any girl that comes to me, any sister that comes to me, it's about being strong and believing in what is right. So what is right is that you're allowed to express your faith in the way that you choose to, and also when it comes to sport, you should still be able to express yourself that way on the football pitch or whatever sport it is that you're playing. Practically, you know, come to us, for example, the Muslim Women's Sport Foundation. We do a lot of work around this and trying to educate people and make sure that people aren't being prevented to play their sport.
So you are educating people.
We are.
You mean Muslims, or you are educating the governing bodies
for each of the sports? So we go out there and we help those governing bodies to actually engage with this Muslim community, we engage with the ethnic minority communities, and particularly with women, and how to do it, really. Do it in a way that suits them and gets them engaged. You know, it's a massive thing at the moment, getting ethnic minority women into sport. So there is no barrier in their way at all to prevent them from playing sports. You know, someone in Switzerland shouldn't be stopping them from playing sport here. And similarly around the world, if we can help to give a positive image of people that wear the headscarf, sisters that wear the headscarf, and show what can be achieved and how it can be achieved with these women, then to me, that's the best response that you can
have to that. On the practical ground, would you, because this is always a question of, you know, a strategic take on the whole issue. Do we need an international body or international alliances, so to speak, people coming together say this is not acceptable? Or should we start in the UK, for example, because you are saying it's easier, and in the UK show that it works? Because I think it's the other way around. Even if it works in the UK, the pressure is going to be so strong that it's going to impact. And we are now in the UK hearing things that 10 years ago it would have been impossible to hear. And because this is the situation, you know, even to speak about the headscarf, the niqab and things, what is going on? So I would say, what is the best strategy in this? And what are you doing? Are you working at the local, international, national level?
Actually, all three. So I'm sure you understand there are, with FIFA, there are going to be sort of the political angles that you need to think about and how things work. So, you know, FIFA are made up of bodies from the individual FAs around the world, and we have to work with those FAs to get our message across. It is those are the people, those are the representatives that make the decisions. And if we can influence them properly and give them a good perspective and the right perspective on this particular issue, then that's what will create the changes at the top.
But are they reachable?
So they are reachable, you know, by each individual in their country.
Yes.
You know, there are not that many organizations like ours in this country, around the rest of the world, but there are, you know, people that are working towards this. There are a lot of women around the world, a lot of Muslim women around the world
are working on that.
That are working not just on the hijab issue, but actually generally women's sport for them, whether it's in a Muslim country, whether it's in a Muslim minority country. You know, there are a lot of women working towards this, and there's a lot of great work being done around the world. And it's a case of those people taking their stories to their FA, for example, their football association, so the Australian or the Qatari or, you know, the football organizations that are there, to take it to them to make that change, because they're the people that have to be reached in order to make the change at the top. Now, we do that work with the English FA. We pressurize the English FA to then influence the rest of them, because You know, we can't go and sit on a FIFA board, for example.
Yes. But from where you are, just a quick answer on that. From where you are, do you feel that things are improving? Because my feeling is that women in sports, this is improving a great deal. Throughout the Muslim majority countries in the West, we have more and more women. And at the same time, we have this, you know, reaction, so to speak, and even discriminatory decisions. So how, what is your assessment? Is it improving on the ground?
I guess the issues are becoming more to light because more and more Muslim women are getting out there and playing sports.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's got to be a good thing, you know, more Muslim women being involved and being healthy and active. That's a brilliant thing. Mm. And the issues are unfortunately coming to light, and that's a kind of an aside for me. In terms of the issue itself, you know, I don't think it's changed that much. I think the fact that the law has changed is a step backwards, because the law never previously, like I say, mentioned even anything about religious statements. So that's a backward step. However, I think in the long term, really it's about women saying, this law does not impact me. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to be involved with sports and I'm going to keep working to compete or just to play. Whatever it is they want to do, this law should not impact them.
Thank you so much. I think that during this discussion, we have been able to touch some of the very sensitive issues here. It's not, you know, all this discussion about, you know, women in sports and no visible religious sciences has to do with the whole, you know, discussion that we have in the West now with the visibility of religion, and especially, of course, of Islam. Of course, it's targeting also other traditions, other religions. At the end of the day, it's a question of, you know, right and discrimination. And as you were saying and trying to do at the local level, the national level, international level, it's a question of education, of reaching out to make it clear that what we want is for the Muslim women to be involved in sport, to practice sport with their rights and with the respect of their principles as Muslim women. So this is something which is important. And then as you were ending, and I think it's a very important thing, which is no victim mentality, to be assertive and to carry on and to say, I'm going to carry on sport because this is my right and my will. So these are important take for the future. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen. And here is the way to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programs. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programs, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments, and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Rimla Akhtar. Thank you so much for your input and your vision on this very important issue. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.